to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. Trying to get hold of Jack Rasmus. Jack, if you're listening, pick up your phone. Jack is a professor of political economy. He's at St. Mary's College and Santa Clara University in California. He comes on this program on a regular basis. His latest book is called Epic Recession, Prelude to Global Recession. Anybody who tells you that everything is all well in the world, financially and economically, either doesn't know what they're talking about or they're a bald-faced liar or a combination of both. Things aren't all well in the world. Things are pretty dismal. You know, maybe the big corporations are making money and the banks are doing all right. Well, you know how they do business. They may, well, especially the banks and the big financial operations, they make money the old-fashioned way. They steal it. And they do it in complicity with the government that gives them license to steal. Well, anybody can do well if you got a license to steal. And, of course, they own the Federal Reserve. There's nothing federal about it, and it doesn't have reserves. They print up all the money that the banks want. Well, it has no choice. The banks own it, especially the Wall Street banks, the New York Fed District, the Mother District, the other 11 are pikers. Compared to the New York district, that's where the power is, and that's where the control is. And the Fed chairman, Bernanke, he's nothing but a hired hand. He either obeys orders or he gets the boot, and someone else comes in and gets the job to print up all the money that the banks want. Well, you know, you can play this dirty game just so long, and sooner or later you hit a wall. Where is it? When is it coming? Who knows? Who can tell? They want to suck every last bloody buck they can out of this thing until the whole house of cards collapses. The longer this goes on, and I can remember Bob Chapman while he was alive, and he would come on this program and update us on a regular basis, and he explained that the longer this dirty game goes on, the louder the bang there'll be when the end finally comes. That's the way it happens. You know, you blow up a bubble, and you blow, and you blow, and you blow, and the bigger you blow, the louder the pop when it finally goes. Again, no one knows when it's coming. Bob didn't know. He estimated somewhere, a five-year time span that he said a lot on this program and in his own writing, the International Forecaster, that he put out twice a week, still being published in his absence. And he guessed any time between the end of last year, which did not happen, and around 2017. Well, it could come any time. Again, you know, you exceed the speed limit too long, and sooner or later you're going to have a wreck. The law of averages catches up to everybody. And the law of averages, it doesn't matter whether it's a person, whether it's a country, an economy, whatever it is. You simply can't go beyond what you're capable of doing for a greater period of time than is possible, or you're going to have a very bad ending. And it's happening in America. It's happening in Europe. And if they go, of course, the entire world is affected. Have we got Jack on? Jack, not on yet? Still trying to get Jack. Well, if we get Jack on, we'll talk about the economy. I get involved in so much else all the time. Oh, Jack, are you on? No, Jack. Well, we're trying to get him. We're trying to get him. Hopefully we'll make contact with Jack. That's unusual because he's usually Johnny on the spot coming on this program. Maybe something came up. We'll carry the ball. It doesn't make any difference. I carried the ball this morning. I did two programs for Press TV. I went downtown, and we did them by satellite, and I came back about an hour ago. We did one program on U.S.-Iranian relations, focusing mainly on Iran's nuclear program. It was a wonderful interview. They asked questions, and I gave the best answers that I could. And I've written so much about this that this really comes very easily to me. Iran's program is entirely peaceful, and I've said it many times on this program that it isn't I who says these things. It's U.S. intelligence. America has 16 intelligence agencies. Annually, they do a combined assessment of the world, country by country, including what they call terrorist threats and related things to that, things related to national security. That's what it's all about. And every year in recent years, they've said basically the same thing. There is no evidence whatever that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. It doesn't mean they don't have one. It's just that we can't find any evidence that they have one. There is no country in the world more heavily surveilled than Iran. I don't think any other country would tolerate the level of surveillance that Iran puts up with. I don't know why Iran puts up with it. Literally, Iran goes above and beyond what it ever should agree to, and nothing whatsoever can be found that shows it's not in compliance with National Non-Proliferation Treaty provisions. That's a lot more than you can say about America. America violates one of them after another. There is nothing legitimate about America's nuclear program. It does exactly what it wants. It spurns all international laws and treaties and conventions. That's the way rogue states operate. The same is true for Israel. You know, Israel's open secret is it's nuclear armed and dangerous, and it has a lot more than nuclear weapons. It has a stockpile of very dangerous chemical and biological weapons, and make no mistake, when Israel attacks another country, as it does to Palestine all the time, Gaza, Lebanon 2006, who knows who comes next? Illegal weapons are used. Biological, chemical. And how can I say something like that? During the CAS-led attack, December 2008, January 2009, about 3 weeks, doctors saw injuries they never saw before. Horrific injuries. Ordinary weapons don't make these kinds of injuries. They had to come from something else. It was hard to identify what they were. And the conclusion for some of them was chemical, illegal chemical and biological weapons were used, causing grievous injuries. Some of the people affected will never recover. If they live, they'll be disabled or maimed to some respect for the rest of their lives. Has Israel paid a price? No. Has Washington paid a price for doing this? Washington uses depleted uraniums in all its wars. I think Israel does too. The first depleted uranium weapons were tested in cooperation with Israel, and I believe it was back in the 1970s. So Israel very much is involved in these kind of weapons. We're talking about nuclear radiation. Doesn't matter whether it's depleted or active or whatever it is. Radiation is radiation, and radiation causes horrendous problems. Using it against civilians or even against combatants, these are war crimes, crimes against humanity. And if you use them on a massive enough scale or on a prolonged, for a prolonged enough period, we're talking about genocide. I call it slow motion genocide. You kill enough people over a number of months and years and decades, the only way to describe it is to call it genocide, slow motion style. You know, you drop a few nuclear bombs, you speed up the process. But if you do it more slowly, genocide by other means. It's shocking to think how long this has gone on. Still no answer with Jack. Anyway, we'll carry on. So I discussed U.S.-Iranian relations. The IAEA wrapped up talks. The IAEA has regular inspections of Iran's nuclear facilities. The latest ones ended in early February. And the conclusion of their investigation was there is nothing to indicate that Iran does not have an entirely peaceful nuclear program. No nuclear weapons development at all. IAEA. The IAEA usually is an imperial tool. So I'm surprised they came up with an assessment like that, but they did. So the bottom line is Iran has a peaceful nuclear program, just like dozens of other countries. So why in the hell does Washington and Israel and some of the European countries browbeat its government all the time? Well, the issue has got nothing to do with its nuclear program. The issue is regime change. Washington, Israel, some of the European countries, because they're pressured to go along, tolerate no independent governments. Washington wants subservient pro-Western ones. Israel wants the same thing. And the big European NATO partners, Britain, Germany, Italy, France, throw Spain in, they're pressured to go along. Maybe one day they'll get backbone enough to say we don't want this anymore, because they literally shoot themselves in the foot to go along with what Washington wants. Why don't they grow up and act like men, like grown-up countries, instead of kids? They embarrass themselves by going on with policies that are not only lawless and wrong-headed, but they actually harm themselves by doing it. Washington can exert an awful lot of pressure. There's no question about it. They can make people and they can make countries feel great pain. But Britain's been around a long time, and Germany and France and the other European countries. Have they got a mind of their own, or are they spineless tools of Washington? Well, so far they're the latter, not the former. Maybe one day that'll change. Washington wants regime change. It wants puppet leadership replacing independent leadership. Doesn't care if it's democratic, despotic, or anything in between. That's never the issue. Some of Washington's strongest allies are despot states. Dare I name them? Oh, we know who they are. And I certainly throw Israel into that pot. There's nothing democratic about Israel. It never was and isn't now. The same holds for America. Ordinary people suffer so much because of these things. On a separate program, a Press TV program I never heard of, called The Money Train, they interviewed me on the Bilderberger Organization. It was a few years ago that I wrote about the Bilderbergs, and I made a checklist of some of the things that really define what they're all about. I don't want to go over the checklist now. I don't have it in front of me. I wanted to write it down so I could give the viewers the full package rather than trust my memory. There were about a dozen things that are prime issues that the Bilderberg power structure wants to accomplish. And who are these people? Well, you know, organizations very secretive, have an annual meeting. The guy with the most power of all, his nickname is the Master Spider. Anybody know who the Master Spider is? He's 97 years old. Still going, as far as I know. In June, he'll be 98. His last name begins with an R. His great-great-grandfather, I think it was his great-great-grandfather, his name was John D. Oh, you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about David Rockefeller. He's the kingpin. There may be no other person in the world with more power than David Rockefeller. And, you know, the good die young and the bad ones seem to go on forever. 97 years old, and he still shows up at all these meetings. And he's a man to be reckoned with without any question. Over the decades, after his great-grandfather got involved in oil and became the oil kingpin, they got involved in money, so they combined the banking and oil and the rest of it, and you just have a tremendous amount of power. There's no greater power than money power. That's the supreme power. Nothing matches it. And money power controls the world, controls America, controls Obama. He's beholden to the moneyed interests that own him. And all you other U.S. presidents and all people of power in Western countries, they're all beholden to money power and to the power, to the embedded power structure controlled by money. And David Rockefeller is at the pinnacle of this power. There's nothing good about David Rockefeller. There's nothing good about the Bilderbergers, the most powerful of the world's movers and shakers. You know, keep political people, business people, others from academia, from religious circles, from the media, and they assemble. Some of them may come all the time. Others come by invitation. And, oh, maybe 6, 7 dozen, maybe a little more than that, show up annually, and they get together. Information about what they talk about seems to leak out. I'm sure not everything, but some information leaks out, and it gets published, I would guess, with a fair degree of accuracy. But a lot of stuff they keep secret. Basically, they want to control the world. They want a classless society with rulers and serfs. That's what it comes down to. They want NATO to be a global military enforcer. A global military, and they call it, they want NATO to serve that role. They want one size fits all for the entire planet, and they want to run it, everything. A single currency, a single government, a single military. It goes on and on and on, with individuals having no rights whatever. Serfs, serfs get enough to get by on so they can, you know, stay alive and produce for the people with the power. And that's what the Bilderbergs want. So that's what I discussed on the money train. And they actually wanted me to stay for a third program that I've been on before, but it airs at the bottom of this hour. And as I like to say, it's not a good idea for the host not to show up. I couldn't do it because I absolutely have to host my own program. That is my top priority. When we go on daylight time on the 10th of March, coming up 2 weeks from, if I get the dates right, it's the 10th of March in America, a little later in Europe, I think. In America, it's the 10th of March, and today is the 23rd. So that would be that, 2 weeks from today, 2 weeks from tonight, we go on daylight time. So I would be very able to go on the program, and because it will come on 30 minutes after my program ends. It means going downtown to a studio and doing it via satellite, which I can do, and I've done it many times. Press TV is wonderful. Press TV lets me speak as freely as I do on this program. They have me on quite often. It's a joy to come on and have no restraints whatsoever on what I want to say. And I always have something to say because I'm always putting out articles. I put out one today. Well, I actually put out three today. It's very unusual for me. I was backed up, and I put out three. My last one was about Israeli settlements. I wrote an article about Israeli settlements and an organization that tries to convince students that they're really not as bad as people say they are. Well, they're worse than people say they are. This organization tried and fell on its face. They absolutely failed dismally to make a case that the settlements in any way are justifiable. They absolutely are not. When you break the law, that is not justifiable. The settlements break the law. It's very clear in black and white. Fourth Geneva, you cannot take another country's property. You cannot settle your own people there. Very clear. If I remember the article in Fourth Geneva, I think it might be, it's either Article 46 or 49. It's in the 40s. Very easy to find. Anybody can Google Fourth Geneva. Look up those articles. You spot it. And the English is very simple and straightforward to understand. You don't have to be a lawyer to understand international law or U.S. law and write about it. You know, the lawyers can twist the language and make it sound very complicated. But when this stuff is written, especially international law, it's extremely clear. And I quote it all the time. People think I'm a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer. But I can read. So can most other people. People listening to this program, for sure. The two others I wrote, I said, UNESCO Peace Prize to a war criminal. UNESCO. Can you imagine UNESCO? I use their definition of what they are. They call themselves their educational, scientific, and cultural organization. They stress building peace in the minds of men and women. It works to, quote, this is the quotes, it works to create the conditions for dialogue among civilizations, cultures, and peoples based upon respect for commonly shared values. And they go on and on and on and on. What absolute rubbish. So what did UNESCO do? Well, it's my title of my article, UNESCO Peace Prize to a War Criminal. Who did they give it to? They gave it to France's president, François Hollande. And what did he get it for? For his naked aggression against Mali. He went into a non-belligerent country. He's waging war. He's murdering innocent civilians. Well, I guess that would entitle any leader to a peace prize, right? Obama won the Nobel Award in 2009. Oh, my God. He barely had found his way to the Oval Office. According to the Nobel Committee members, it was something to the effect that they wanted to inspire him to be a peace president, not a war president. After the award, he was emboldened to commit more, to wage more wars. Maybe he'll get a second Nobel Award. Makes sense. The more wars you wage, the more likely you are to get more peace prizes. Well, next month when Obama shows up in Israel in March, Shimon Peres, Israel's symbolic president, in Israel the prime minister has the power, the president is mostly symbolic. Shimon Peres is a past prime minister, Now he's the president. He will give Obama Israel's Distinguished Presidential Medal. Distinguished Presidential Memo. That's basically the name of it. Obama, last year, I think around mid-year, gave Shimon Peres America's equivalent of that award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So one war criminal honors another one. Isn't that the way the dirty game goes? Shocking. You go around the world murdering people, and you get a peace prize, or you get a Presidential Medal of Freedom, or you get Israel's Distinguished Presidential Medal. Again, this emboldens leaders to do more killing. My other article, where is it? Well, the other one was on Syria. And I called it, Washington backs Syrian anti-government terrorism. I knew that without looking it up. Washington backs Syrian anti-government terrorism. 2 years and running, Washington has been waging proxy war on Syria. 2 years and running, began winter 2011. Who knows how many Syrians have been killed? The UN comes out with numbers. They have no idea. Nobody goes out in the streets and counts the bodies. So they come up with numbers. 40,000, 50,000, 60,000. The latest number I saw was 70,000. Might as well make it 100,000. Most of them are innocent civilians. They're being killed by Washington-recruited death squads. Death squads. In the 1980s, they were called the Salvador Option, ravaging El Salvador, Guatemala, Nicaragua, killing innocent people. This was America's imperial policy then. In Vietnam, it was called Operation Phoenix. There were estimates of how many innocent Vietnamese were killed. I remember writing about it, and I remember a number that I used as an estimate, 80,000. It could have been 180,000, who knows. Innocent people. None of this ever works. It's done anyway. The more people you kill, the more enemies you make. It happens the same way all the time. That's what's happening in Afghanistan. That's what happened in Korea during the Korean War. You simply embolden the local people to absolutely despise you and to inspire them to fight you to get rid of this yoke that's murdering their women, their children, their friends, other family members. And that's what happens. That's what's going on in Syria right now. Washington, its main NATO partners, Britain, Germany, France, Italy, complicit with their regional allies, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Jordan, Israel, of course. They're recruiting these death squads from many countries in the region and beyond, all over the region. I saw numbers or estimates that they've come from 28 different countries. Could be 38 different countries, from the Middle East, from Eurasia, even some from countries you wouldn't imagine, some European countries, maybe a few from America. I don't know what inspires these people to want to go over and get involved in something like this. I don't know what they promised for doing this. What on earth are they getting? They're certainly not representing democratic freedom. And they're certainly not going to get much out of it, no matter what they've been promised. Promises are made to be broken when America makes them, when Israel makes them, when the European powers make them. The Saudis, the Qataris, the rest of the rogue gang, same thing, happens every time. But they're there, and they keep coming, and Syria is no pushover. It has a strong military, and it's routing these people, but they keep bringing them in. They're like roaches. No matter how many you get rid of, they just keep coming back. There are always more of them. So they're bringing them in, hundreds, thousands, who knows, and they're literally raining terror across the country. They do it all kinds of ways. They go into communities. They attack people. They behead them. They rape the women. They commit other atrocities. They set off car bombs, suicide bombers, maybe set off cars that are loaded with explosives sitting on the side of the road with some kind of a timer, or maybe with a remote control device, and they're murdering all kinds of people. Well, I wrote about the latest one that took place in Damascus, multiple explosions. The numbers I saw was 50-odd people killed, over 200 injured. Russia put out either a statement or a UN resolution, I said a resolution in the article that I wrote, condemning this attack. Washington vetoed it. That's why I use my title. Washington backs Syrian anti-government terrorism. You murder people with car bombs, or you cut their heads off, or you rape their women. This is terrorism. The people, the fighters in Washington and its allies are recruiting are these people. They're committing war crimes. They're committing ghastly atrocities. And Washington supports them, funds them, arms them heavily, directs them. CIA is involved. U.S. Special Forces are involved. Same is true for France and Britain, maybe some of the other European countries. And this goes on every single day. And the president of Syria, Bashar Assad, gets blamed for Washington's crimes, Israel's crimes, other Western crimes. He's doing what any responsible leader should do. If I was the leader of Syria and this was happening on my watch, I would do exactly what he's doing. I would tell my military to go after these people, no holds barred. Get rid of them, shoot them, bomb them, do whatever you have to do. A leader of a country is responsible for protecting the interests and the welfare of the people of that country. If they've been invaded and attacked by rogue death squads, then you are obligated to go at them and rout them any way you have to do it. And those would be my direct orders. I'm sure Assad has given the same orders. So he's charged with war crimes. Self-defense has become a war crime. He absolutely is doing what any responsible leader has to do. Imagine, anybody listening to this program, if your city was invaded by rogue gangs, whoever they are, wherever they came from, you would expect the local police to come out and confront them any way they had to. If they couldn't handle it in America, you'd expect the National Guard to come in. And if they couldn't stop them, you'd expect the Marines to show up. And you'd want them to do anything, anything to rout these people. And if they didn't do it, imagine how you'd feel. We're just about at break time. I'll alert my studio. We'll take a short break, and then we'll come back. And I'll pick it up with more. Don't know what happened to Jack. Maybe he took ill. No idea what happened. Anyway, I'll carry the ball. Let's take a short break, and then I'll come right back. Welcome back. Today I'm host and guest. Well, I'm used to both, so I can handle it pretty well. Let me talk about another article that I wrote recently, just a few days ago. Earlier last year, I wrote considerably about several Palestinians who went on prolonged hunger striking. Israel takes innocent Palestinians and locks them up in its gulag, and believe me, it is a gulag. It's a gruesome place that nobody ever would want to set foot in. Horrific stuff goes on. Palestinians are tortured. They're abused in other ways. children are treated exactly the same way as adults. Kids, young children, as young as 10 years old, occasionally somebody younger than 10 years old. They can be accused of things they didn't do. They're arrested by soldiers. Imagine a 10-year-old arrested pre-dawn by 20 or 30 soldiers. They don't just knock on your door. They break in the middle of the night, pre-dawn. It can be 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, family is sleeping, and they just bust the door in, and they come in, and they ransack the home. Nobody in home, nobody there did anything, but they claim somebody, maybe the head of household, maybe one of his children, maybe a sibling, an older sibling, and they grab them, and they usually beat them, throw them to the ground, put very tightly fitting handcuffs on them, throw them in a military vehicle, take them off to a detention center. Interrogation can begin then, or they can take them to a special interrogation place, and then they can hold them without the ability to have counsel see them or family members. Put them on trial if they want to do that in a military tribunal with a military judge. The system is guilt by accusation. If they say you did something, it doesn't matter whether you did or not. It matters that they said you did it. There are thousands of Palestinian political prisoners languishing in Israel's gulag. Over the years, some of them have hunger struck for justice. Last year, there were two in particular that got a lot of world headlines. That's very unusual. If I could remember the names, Kader Adnan, and he went for 66 days, and he was finally released. And a woman named Hana Shalabi. I'm surprised I remember these names. It's been a long time since I wrote about them. They stood out, and they really did make world headlines, and I think that's why they got some relief. Well, there have been others as well. And I wrote, currently, there are 4 long-term hunger strikers. None of them did a thing. I describe their offense usually in language like this. They're guilty of wanting to live free on their own land, in their own country, in their own homes. Or they're guilty of praying to the wrong God. Literally, Israel vilifies non-Jews, especially Muslims. And some of the quotes from some of the top people, now and in the past, curl your heel. You can get them to say what they really believe. Pretty ugly stuff. Not the way I was brought up. But that's the way they operate. That's the way they govern the country. And there are good people in Israel. And there are good Jewish people everywhere who absolutely are appalled about this kind of behavior. I wrote about a young man. He's in his early 30s, if I can pronounce his name right. His name is Samir Issawi. He's literally been hunger striking for over 200 days. And I think when I wrote this article a few days ago, it was up to something like 200 in the high teens. How can anybody survive without ingesting food? He's taking something. He's been taking liquids, water, maybe getting glucose or something that barely lets him survive. But you can't go on like this forever. He shouldn't be there. In October 2011, he was one of hundreds of Palestinians who were exchanged for the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit. 14 of them were rearrested. Israel's agreements aren't worth the paper they're written on. They cut a deal. They let these people go. Samir had been in prison. He'd been arrested a number of times in the past. He never committed any offense. No crime whatsoever. In Israel, in Palestine, it doesn't matter. Israel wants to come get you. They come get you for whatever reason they want. They use secret evidence. They invent evidence if it doesn't exist. So virtually all the Palestinians in Israel's prisons shouldn't be there. They should be free. Again, they just want to live freely on their own land in their own country. Everyone has the right to that. Israel criminalizes it. Sama had his day in court a few days ago. He drew a little bit of attention. That helped him a little bit, but it remains to be seen how much. The military judge sentenced him to 8 months in prison. His sentence begins from the term his current sentence is on. Israel rearrested him in July 2012, so nominally he has a month to go. But it doesn't work that way, because there's a committee that he has to go before. The committee could sentence him to another 20 years. Well, Israel arrested him again because they wanted him in prison long term. So don't bet that they won't decide to just keep him there. Israel has something called administrative detention. Reasonably used, it's permissible under international law. Israel does nothing reasonably. In other words, if you think someone is dangerous, international law permits you to detain this person for a short-term period to decide, is it true or is it not true? Well, again, Israel doesn't operate that way because it seizes people for political reasons, not criminal ones. So Samer is one of these people, and many others are these type people. And administrative detentions usually run 6 months, but they can be extended another 6 months and another ad nauseum. So you literally can keep someone locked up for life by continuing to renew administrative detentions when they run out. And you've got to go back to a courtroom. Israel has no problem doing that. They say, we have secret evidence that proves this person is a danger to national security and is likely to commit terrorism. Rubber stamp another 6 months. That's the way the system works. Guilt by accusation. That's Samer's status right now. I wrote about him. I'll follow him to see what happens. Will he get out? Even if he gets out, will he stay out? He could be released. He could be released on terms he won't accept. He wants to go home to his family. He could be released on terms that either, if his home is in the West Bank, it could be that Israel will order him to go to Gaza. Or maybe the reverse, if his home is in Gaza. Or East Jerusalem, same thing. Or maybe a deal could be cut that they would want him deported. Well, he wants to be with his family. He's got every right to do that. Israel did more to his family because of what they did to him. They went after his father, after his brothers, two of his brothers, no, I think three of his brothers, and his sister. They harassed them. They arrested at least two of his brothers. They arrested his sister short term, put her under house arrest, and continued to harass the family, including the father. And you can expect this to continue. And they're one of many Palestinians to go through exactly the same thing. You never read a word about this or hear a word reported in the U.S. media. Nothing. These are serious crimes. This is a good definition of state terrorism. I don't know what else to call it. Innocent people, brutalized, imprisoned wrongly, family members, because they happen to be a father, a mother, a sibling of a person Israel targets, they become targets automatically. This is the way Israel operates. It's got nothing to do with Jewishness. It's got to do with rogue government. That's what it is. I repeat again, there are a lot of good people in Israel. Unfortunately, the people that run the country are not good, and they're the ones that are causing grief. Every week, this is really astonishing, every week, every single week in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, there are multiple community incursions where a community small community, a neighborhood, can be entered violently by Israeli soldiers. I mean, literally, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights puts out a weekly report on this. And you can go to their website, Palestinian Center for Human Rights, look up their latest report. And you see, every single week it looks the same, more or less. In the last week, there were 60 or there were 70 incursions into West Bank, East Jerusalem neighborhoods. Well, you know, seven into that number. I mean, you talk about, what, eight, nine a day? Every single day. Every single day. Imagine your local police coming into your neighborhood, breaking into homes in the middle of the night, arresting your family members. This is what the Palestinians put up with all the time. I mean, all of the communities are targeted the same day. But you target five, six, seven, eight every single day, and sooner or later they'll probably get to everybody. Who can live under conditions like this? This is what the Palestinians put up with every single day. The U.S. media say absolutely nothing. They support Israel 100%. All of their crimes, all of their lawlessness, the settlements, the incursions, the targeted assassinations, the whole schmear. I don't write on any topic more often than this one, Israel-Palestine. There's so much to say, and so little in the U.S. major media, the scoundrel media, what I call them, for good reason, that I feel somebody's got to say something. I urge others to do the same thing. So this is a very important topic for me. Injustice is an important topic. Most Americans don't understand this. They don't know about it. They probably don't worry about it. Paul Craig Roberts, in his latest article, oh, he had a wonderful tagline at the end, the second to last line. He wrote an article that he called What If? How might the world have changed if A happened instead of B, or if B happened instead of A? Oh, a lot of good stuff. But Paul writes an article. He was on this program on Friday. I nearly lost him because they had a storm down in Florida where he is. And luckily it passed and we got him on. We got him on without any trouble. But he ended the program complaining. He ended his article complaining about the fact that most Americans don't think. They don't think. And his line was, thinking is America's national disability. That's a line I wish I thought of. And then he said, I'm all for anything that provokes Americans to think. And I would add my comment onto what he said. For those Americans who think at all, or even the ones who don't, most often they're dismissive. I understand being occupied with the things in your daily life, your work, your family. It's important. I was. I'm retired, so I can spend all my time doing what I want to do now, writing, media work, interviews, hosting. So I don't have the obligations I had in earlier years. I have an advantage. But everybody can take some time to understand what's going on. The most important things, because it affects us directly. And if we don't take the trouble to find out, then government is doing an awful lot of bad things that are causing us great harm now and into the future. That's what I mean by dismissiveness. Most Americans simply don't spend the time. They don't care. They don't think about caring to worry about the things that matter most to them. So, a double disability, a national disability of not thinking, and a second one of dismissiveness. And that's why America gets away with murder. Literally. Literally. So much more to talk about. So many things that really obsess me and I try to focus on. I've said so much about Obama. I never expected much of him as president. In 2008, and I've mentioned this before on this program, I wrote about his record in the Senate. I wrote about him back when he was in Illinois State Senate, when he was supposedly a community activist. He was always a man beholden to the power structure. That's what he was. And his voting record when he was a senator was more Republican than most Republicans. The only thing that surprised me about him was he was worse than I ever expected. He's also a con man. A con man. After all the harm he's caused at home and abroad, he's still got half the country supporting him. Why, they'll have to explain. He's harmed them, his constituents, the people he's done the most harm to, low-income people, impoverished people, unemployed people. Why on earth don't they blame him for what he's done? He's been a job destroyer, not a creator. The official numbers that come out are rigged, they're fixed, they're phony. You know what the unemployment rate is. Gets talked about on this program. 23%, not the 7, 8, or 9, or whatever cockamamie number they report. That's a phony number. The way the calculation was done 3 decades ago, 23%. Inflation, it's not 3%, it's 9%. The way the calculation was done 3 years ago. Anybody who eats, drives a car, heats a home, air conditions in the winter, pays medical bills, pays college tuitions, they know more about inflation than the smart-ass talking heads who come on television and tell you inflation is 3%. Incomes compared to inflation have been declining for decades. How long will it take before mass America is impoverished? Well, that's the Bilderberger idea. They don't want people paid anything. And Obama came up with a proposal to raise the minimum wage to $9. You know what $9 is? 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. It's about $17,000 or $18,000 a year. A family of four in Chicago can't live. Certainly can't live on double that amount. I mean, you could live very badly on that amount. $9 an hour. Double that amount really isn't enough. But as a minimum, we shouldn't be talking about a minimum wage. We should be talking about a living wage. And a living wage varies. It's a lot different downstate in Illinois than it is in Chicago, or in New York versus a small town, or a small-sized city anywhere in America. A living wage is what matters. The Census Bureau hasn't redefined its definition of poverty in many years. It even admitted that it hasn't done it. So why hasn't it done it? And the official poverty demarcation for a family of four is flat across the board nationwide, about $22,500. Family of four in Chicago, $22,500. They will go through some mighty mean and nasty hard times. I don't know how they would make it. I don't think they could make it. The definition should be minimally double that number. Double that number. It's been a while, but I've written about this. So we've got that. We've got the economic issue. We've got the political issue. I don't know what's going to happen on the so-called nominal deadline of March 1st. I wrote a lot about the fiscal cliff. Fiscal cliff is a hoax. There is no fiscal cliff. There is no debt. There's a debt problem. But there certainly is no emergency to address it. And addressing it can be done responsibly and fixed easily. Simple solution to the debt problem. Not the way they want to do it. They want to destroy. There's bipartisan agreement on this. They want it, Republicans and Democrats, and Obama insists on it. Forget what he says. Watch what he does. Watch what he does. He says one thing, he does another. He does it all the time. The issue is destroying America's social contract, especially the big items. The falsely called entitlements, Medicare and Social Security, they are not entitlements. They are federally funded insurance programs, and the government has welched on us, welched on me. I've been on Medicare. I've been paying Medicare premiums. Well, I don't pay them anymore because I retired, so I don't have an income that I had when I was working and had a payroll tax deducted. But a payroll tax is an insurance premium. That's what it is. And I've quoted verbatim from the Medicare program, from the Social Security program, what it is, what it's supposed to do, who's supposed to get it, and what the terms are, what the agreement is, what the deal is. The deal was welched on. And now they want to destroy it altogether, incrementally over time. Death by a thousand cuts, like boiling a frog. That's the plan. Republicans and Democrats are in it together. So when Obama says, you know, hold back on the sequester, he's not talking about ending it. He's talking about manipulating the public mind to make it look like the Republicans are bad guys and he's the good guy. They're all bad guys. They're all bad guys. So simple to fix the deficit problem. The military budget is so grossly bloated. More spent on the military, including what's spent for Homeland Defense, for interest on the national debt, for veterans' benefits, for secret black budgets, for intelligence budgets, more is spent than the rest of the world put together. Minimally $1.5 trillion. Who knows how much it is? It could be $2 trillion. We don't know, because there is so many hundreds of billions in black budgets that only the people who put them there know what the real totals are. $1.5 to $2 trillion a year. What on earth does America need to spend that much money for its military? America has no enemies, hasn't had one since mid-August 1945. The only enemies America has are the ones it invents. It's been that way. What is it, 65 years? Every so-called enemy America attacked was one America invented. America never should have gone to war one single time since the Japanese surrendered. But it sure did. Every year, when World War II ended, war continued. Every year, no exception, including what goes on at home against innocent people. Innocent people in U.S. prisons, the biggest prison gulag in the world, about 2.5 million. Most of them don't belong there. Plus America's overseas torture prisons, secret ones. Again, U.S. media never talk about these things. They're all over the world. Maybe they shift from place to place at times. Once in a while, locations come out. Innocent people get put there. They're brutally tortured. You know the way the game works. Ugly stuff. What if America cut its $2 trillion military budget, including for Homeland? What if it cut it in half and only spent $1 trillion? I don't know why it has to spend more than $100 billion. In other words, cut it 95%. I'll settle for it for half for starters. Can you imagine what could be done with $1 trillion a year? Could give free health care to everybody in the country. Free education to everybody in the country. Eliminate poverty. How's that for a starter? How's that for handling the debt problem? Is anybody talking about this? No. Is anybody talking about anything to grow the economy? No. Is anybody talking about anything responsible? Nothing I've heard. Nothing I've written about. We're just about at the end of the program. I've got to wrap it up. Maybe Jack took ill. If he did, I hope he's okay. I'll get him back. He's got his own PRN program, so he knows how PRN works. Join us again next Friday. We'll be on at 11 a.m. every Friday on weekends, and today and tomorrow on 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And I always say make it a regular habit, because this is a truth hour. I'm committed to telling the truth. I'm committed to getting top people on like Jack, so that the listeners know what's going on, so that we can protect ourselves. Because change only comes from the bottom up, and I'm committed for that. I'm committed for a better world. I hope we all are. Join us tomorrow.